Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we are talking about celebrating the badass women of cannabis, and we are joined by Tig DeVallis and Julie Brentz, the COO and Chief Legal Officer of Shake Brands Corporation. Thank you for being here with us today.
Yeah, appreciate it. Hi, everyone.
Hello, hello. And we also have one other special addition to this 99th episode of the Hoban Minute, and that is our producer, the esteemed Halston Puchek, who will be joining us as well. Halston, thank you for being on this side of the microphone today.
Oh, I'm very excited to be here. Thanks, guys.
So before we jump into all the topics that we want to cover, will you please tell us just a little bit about your personal journeys and the Shake brands that you are currently working with?
Yeah, sure. Julie here. We started out, couldn't get any more southern than this, at a crawfish boil in Arkansas. That's where we're all from, or all reside. And started talking about cannabis, and this was back in early 2016 when the initiative was coming on board for a medical cannabis for Arkansas. And I had had a previous background in cannabis out of California, and thought, man, this would be a perfect time to really start ahead of time before anybody gets their wheels turning to start thinking about brands and good southern brands and how can we bring those iconic brands to life. And Tig and myself and Brittany Phillips, one of our design partners, and we just got together and we said, hey, let's do this. And so we started some IP work and trademark transaction work early on, just thinking what would be some good brands that we could bring to market. And we started pitching those around to some of these dispensary applicants. And we really didn't get anywhere with it. And we were so surprised. You know, all these guys were telling us, whoa, 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 wait a minute. We just want to sell some bud right now. We don't need to think about branding and all that kind of stuff. And so at the end of the day, we looked at each other and said, hey, let's just do it ourselves. And from that moment, you know, Shake was born, and along with that, some other IP collections. And we first began with CBD and Me, our first brand that we brought to life. And I'll let Tig kind of hop in there a little bit too.
Yeah, I was just going to also, to put a finer point on what Julie was saying, Arkansas is one of the only states that had a medical cannabis program that was coming out of the ground at the exact same time their industrial hemp program was coming online. So literally with just a few weeks of each other, we had the cannabis licenses were announced and hemp came right after that. So it was sort of an afterthought for a lot of people, which in a weird timing way allowed us to get involved on the hemp side of the business and go after a processing license for industrial hemp. Now at the time, we didn't know that we were the only female applicants in our state. And all we knew was everybody's eyes were kind of distracted looking at all the litigation and craziness and hoopla going on behind the scenes in the cannabis business. So we just put our heads down, continue to work on the branding side and intellectual property portfolio like Julie was talking about. And we went after this processing license. And we were the first license awarded in our state. And we still are the only all-female team, which I think is badass.
Yeah, we do.
Well, it is absolutely badass. Talk a little bit for a moment about an IP portfolio. How do you evaluate that? What goes into this process, especially against the backdrop of understanding that there are some limitations as to what you can protect from an IP perspective? How did you evaluate that, and what was your initial thinking?
So for ourselves, what we decided to do, because we were on the hemp side, we thought we were going to get our feet wet trying to figure out, after the Farm Bill passed, of course, we were going to see what CBD registrations were allowed for. We saw there was a whole bunch of filings, right, that happened pretty quickly, and the trademark office hadn't caught up. There was a bunch of rules and things that they hadn't come out with on exactly what that was going to look like and what the wording and language needed to look like on applications. locations. We knew that we wanted CBD in the name of our first brand. That was really important to us. We did not want to list CBD as an ingredient. We felt strongly that we could come out with CBD in the name, but that was also troublesome when we first started looking at the category. And so one of the things that we did to minimize our risk was to go after cosmetics and topicals, because that was low-hanging fruit. We thought, hey, if we're going to do this, we're not going to mess with dietary supplements and ingestibles and edibles and all that. We'd like to try to figure out if we can get one application through on the topical side. So that's what we did under, you know, skins and body lotions and things like that for cosmetics. And that was one that took us almost 4 years, if you can believe that. From the time we thought up the name and tagline and filed it and refiled it and answered every, just kept coming back with different answers for all the questions that was asked of us by the trademark office. And part of it's just perseverance, really. Making sure that you get your place in line and keep it and figuring out that language that's going to work for you. And so we were lucky enough to work with local council on some of that. And then once we got one through, we didn't let that deter us when we had some issues. We took what we learned from one application and we filed it in other categories. We started going into herbal supplements. We started going into tonics and drinks and all kinds of different things to see, you know, how we can, on the hemp side, how we could do that. And then really, we were researching it for clients that were coming to us saying, can you guys help us? We've got a cannabis brand we want to launch, but we're having trouble getting a trademark through. What do you know that we don't? So we had some good tips from other folks and other women that said, you know, here's the registration if you want to get some ideas from us. And so collaboration was really at the key of it. And being able to look at other people's documents and learn from the mistakes, really.
Well, picking up on the theme of the day for this particular episode, we just came out of a week where we at the Hoban Law Group featured our rock star female attorneys and female staff. And Halston, you were a large part. You are a badass woman on the Hoban Law Group staff, no doubt about it. But also you're a large part for sort of helping drive that effort. Talk to us a little bit about that, the success of that, and just some of your observations having worked in this industry for as long as you've worked in it. And women and their role and the evolving role of women, because companies that don't look to diversify, period, let alone bring women, females into their leadership group, they don't necessarily succeed, or at least the percentages in this industry especially show that there's a greater likelihood that they won't succeed. Can you talk about some or all of those points?
Sure, absolutely. No, last week was absolutely a success, and so blessed to have wonderful women on our team, and just looking to the attorneys and learning more about their backgrounds and really just being able to highlight them and the work that they're doing in the space really just opens it up to, I think, just almost a younger generation entering into the cannabis industry. You really see women, you know, in their younger 20s and 30s, 40s, just jumping into this industry, being executives and really just taking the lead and going for it. So I'm, again, just very blessed to be surrounded by the people that we have at the Hoban Law Group, and then going one step further, reaching out to our network and, you know, even you ladies on the line with us today, just seeing what we were putting out there and reaching out and wanting to be a part of it. I thought it was awesome.
Now, taking Julie, you talked about reaching out to folks, you know, and particularly your strong female network to sort of help navigate some things. In that case, you mentioned trademarks. It does occur to me that there is a strong community amongst the women in this industry. And, you know, I say this industry in air quotes in a certain respect, because we're talking about marijuana, we're talking about hemp, we're talking about something that's very, very broad. But can you talk a little bit about that and the support you get along the way from women, even if they're your competitors?
Yeah, right.
Sure. Go ahead, Juju.
Here a little bit, but, you know, when my previous experience in a cannabis farm out in California, there was one woman involved with us named Siobhan Brady, and now she was at that time doing all of our cultivation inspection and stuff. And now she's grown to be executive VP of Justice Grown, you know, kind of nationally recognized in her field there. And we kind of hope to be that same catalyst for women out of Arkansas. And so we're coordinating with, we've got another woman farmer in Arkansas that we're buying like elderberries from and some of her hemp crop from to, you know, manifest the products with her. And then we're hiring outside women to help us with professional photography and e-commerce and digital services and those kind of things. So we hope that through our efforts, other young women can kind of stand on our shoulders and be bolstered by our path.
Yes, and I would just add to that that being told no over and over again is such a great motivator. It really is like a rallying cry to this tribe of women, because so many times you're told it's really not possible, it's not worth it, you don't understand, you know. And we have built a network, not just for women in our area, but paying it forward is such a big part of our mantra. And we're working now with the University of Arkansas Law School to mentor law students that are interested in going into cannabis law. And we've got a female law student, Tara, she's absolutely amazing, and she's with us through next month and has been studying cannabis law and all the legal issues around it. And they've never offered that program. We're a little hesitant, right, to do it, but we kind of talked them into it and said, look, this is the way of the future, and there can be so many great jobs and knowledge shared if we just get more attorneys involved at a young age. So one of the things that we're doing as well is trying to mentor young women that are interested in going into the business while they're still in school, and really laying that groundwork and a foundation, and that's been rewarding for us as well.
No, that's so important, and I would love if you would talk a little bit about, and I know maybe you thought it was a little too spicy for the podcast, but tell us a little bit about that last blog post and maybe the story behind it, if you would.
Sure. So one of our most recent blog posts was a copy of our trademark certificate, CBD and Me, and it took almost 4 years to get that trademark. And I didn't realize that the trademark office is now putting QR codes on their certificates, which it comes with an emblem in the mail. It's like Christmas Day. It's like a golden ticket when you finally get it. But so many times along the way, we've had two outside counsel female attorneys working with us on this from day one. And we've had so many consulting meetings with people where we'd explain to them about how important the brand is and the nature of trademark work and why protecting something is so important. If you're going to put all your money into formulas and have thoughtful products and make sure they're compliant, you'd be surprised how many people would not want to go through that additional step to protect their brand. And so every hurdle that we had, we kind of overcame. But in most of these meetings, people tried to talk us out of registrations. No, that's a waste of money. It's not a good idea. No one will ever catch us if we don't. There's no trademark police. Why? It's almost like, you know, that was an afterthought. And we kind of started to sound like a broken record. No, you can get these trademarks. We promise it's coming. And we did get a little nervous there for a while, thinking, man, are we ever going to get this thing in the mail? But when we did, the last kind of hashtag that I posted is, here is ours, show me yours. And we wanted to just tell all the men out there who told us that this wasn't going to happen and that it wasn't a smart strategy, we've got ours now, and we want the world to know.
Well, who's laughing now, I suppose, but it's a great point of just about perseverance and just understanding that there are so many darn strong opinions in this industry. And if you disagree with anyone, much like the political landscape in our country as a whole, all of a sudden you get vilified, but you're a great example of the successes there. Can you talk a little bit about the Arkansas market? Because it's interesting to me that we've seen this sort of wave of different ways to legalize or regulate the plant across the southern United States. And to a lot of people, it was counterintuitive. I've often heard people, you know, pick a southern state and, you know, if the United States were to legalize cannabis in some form one by one, you know, Mississippi, for example, would be state 55. You know, the point is, it's not going to happen, right? Tell us a little bit about just how that happened. What were the political motivations, and what do you foresee there in terms of a marketplace?
Yeah. Well, Julie, you want to talk about Prop 7?
Yeah. in 2015, we all kind of campaigned hard for Prop 7, which was a little bit more lax than the actual initiative that was formally passed. It allowed for individuals to grow up to 6 plants in their own home, and that was eventually defeated. And in its place came the initiative to do just strict medical consumption only, no initiative to grow yourself. And so Arkansas took a real conservative bent to it and only allowed for 5 commercial growing operations within the state and 40 total dispensary licenses. And they really wanted to clamp down on that. And it's governed by the ABC, of all things, within our state. And so right now, I think we have 36 that have passed and are in some phase of either being fully open or, you know, going through that process of opening their doors. It's really a guarded commodity in our state as compared to like Oklahoma, where I think for $500 anybody can get a license for a dispensary. So it's really interesting the contrast that's available out there state by state.
Yeah, and I would just add to that that on the hemp side, it was regulated by our local state plant board, and the USDA rules didn't come out for a couple of years. So it was a research program, and when we applied for that, we had to put forth our plan about how we were going to research hemp and what we were going to do, and it was a little bit more complicated than just applying for a license to grow, of course, or some other things in the state. And also, they have some interesting rules about how hemp can move across state lines. And one of the biggest complaints, I would say, from Arkansas farmers, at least on the hemp side, is that they grow their product, and it's quality product, and they're ready to move it, and they try to sell it to a Arkansas in-state processor, of course, someone like us that has a processing license. But then for whatever reason, there's a big limitation on what kind of products are considered marketable hemp products. So absolutely no pre-rolls or shake or bud or anything like that can be sold. If it's grown in Arkansas, it cannot be. That's not considered marketable hemp products unless it goes outside the state and comes back in sold as almost like around the merry-go-round. So what a lot of people started to do was ship their stuff to Oklahoma, then back to Arkansas, and the farmers were going, you know, we're losing out here. They were just, I think over half of the hemp grown in the state the first year never left the state and was never sold.
That's an issue we've seen across the country just with hemp that was unfortunately left on farms, but that does sound like a real just an unnecessary hurdle to put and an unnecessary burden to put on farmers in Arkansas. Halston, I'm going to pass it over to you here. Just
Yeah, sure. No, I would love to ask you ladies a question, kind of keeping on the topic here. How are you helping women that want to be in the industry, both on the hemp or marijuana side, how are you helping them really grow their networks in this space working with you all?
Well, we started a Women of Cannabis group, and this was pre-COVID when people actually went outside to bars and restaurants and networking events and meetings and things. And at first, it really just started as people that were working on campaigning on the different propositions that were coming up at the time, cannabis-related initiatives, people that we knew that were canvassing for things on the ballot, changes upcoming. So it started as people that kind of already had some interest, but maybe didn't have a business idea in mind or something specific they were trying to accomplish other than just the measure that was right in front of them. And we hosted the first dinner, I think, over at Brittany's house, and it was kind of like a networking event where there was only 12 of us that started, and we passed around each other's resumes and emails and just started on really a rudimentary level, just these are the people that we know, if you guys are interested, come to the next one. And then we started noticing it would grow a little bit by little bit, and then the next one it was like, ah, it's too big to have at someone's house, let's do it, you know, down in an event space. And then as soon as we started meeting and having these interactions with people, ideas, business ideas would just start spinning out. And it was almost like going to one of these things was so inspiring because you'd hear about all the successes and people would say, hey, I've got this idea, or I need help with this. Does anyone have a contact? And it was sharing in real time and keeping the conversation going both digitally and online. And then when COVID hit, we just started keeping in touch digitally and doing Zoom calls and things. And our network has just kind of grown and grown from there.
Well, I love what you said earlier about finding like-minded women to bolster that collective mentality, because competitor or not, wherever you are in the supply chain, that rising tide lifts all boats, and would love to get you to expand a little bit more on that, but also want to make sure that we mention a couple of things upcoming for you, which are very exciting, which is a joint upcoming interview with Modern Council Mag. And it also looks like you will be launching an e-commerce platform. If you would tell us a little bit about those, that would be excellent. We're dying to hear.
Julie?
Yeah, go ahead, Tig.
Well, we've got a launch coming up on August 17th for our e-commerce platform. We're really, really excited about that. It's been a long time in the making. We've got our USDA certification now, and we've got Hoban to thank for all of their great advice that we've been getting on compliance and all kinds of things like that. And to your other point about, you know, all boats rising and Modern Council Magazine, one thing that I'm really excited about and that we are really as a team, especially having Halston, when Modern Council Magazine called me and said, hey, we've got a women's empowerment issue we want to do, it made me think immediately this spotlight that Hoban's been doing on a week of women and highlighting all the badass women that you have there. What is more inclusive, right, than when someone says, I want to interview you, and then you call someone and says, why don't we get on a call together and do a joint interview? Because that's going to be, we're going to tell our collective story and we're going to stronger together, right? How can we empower other women? So even the nature of how this took place, instead of it becoming just a story about our inside council and maybe just an outside council, we said, let's team up and give our joint experiences. And that's why I'm so excited about next week. We're getting interviewed by Modern Council, and Halston and I will both be able to share our stories, and we can't wait for that piece to come out.
Oh, it was very serendipitous when we had the phone call come through yesterday, and having Women's Week last week, I was thrilled to speak with you ladies and just more thrilled to get you on the podcast today.
Well, we're
so happy to share.
Well, you guys have said it all, and I wanted to just close by this notion of finding people to ally with in this industry in particular is just so critical, because there are so many different perspectives on what this industry really is and how to succeed and what the particular lane is. And that, of course, varies jurisdiction by jurisdiction. And then when you throw that into the region in which you all are located, it makes things, or at least I would presume it compounds the difficulty of doing business even more. So having that community, that voice, that alignment with other folks that can help you navigate the path, perhaps avoid landmines, those are critical things that people often overlook. And particularly in this industry, people just go for it. And what happens when you just go for it? Yeah, some people succeed, but by far the majority don't succeed. So you need that community, you need that backdrop, you need to create a common voice. And thank you guys for sharing all of that.
Yeah. Tig.
Thank you for having us.
Tig,
yes,
Julie,
we appreciate it.
Halston, it really is a pleasure to speak with all of you, to have all of you be in this network, this family, and be a part of this. You can learn more about the work that y'all are doing at shakecollab.com. That's 1L. And we can't wait to bring you on again, hear more about the wonderful things that you're doing. Keep us updated on new developments in Arkansas. It's an interesting market, and we can't wait to talk to you again soon. So you have a great day, and thank you for being with us here on the Hoban Minute.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, appreciate it. Stay well.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.